shit. Oh, shit. It's going off now.
Highway Diaries. Hi, this is Eric Hollerbach. I'm in New Orleans right now. New Orleans. How do you say it, Daryl?
New Orleans.
New Orleans. And you were telling me about gators. You grew up in the bayou. Now, how do you catch an alligator?
You feed them well.
So you have to give up some meat, but then when you get an alligator's tremendously
they love
big.
Chicken.
Okay.
If you take a tree and bend it over towards the water and put a snare line, a trip line, and you put a hook on the end of your snare, your hook line, the alligator will actually come up out of the water, grab the chicken, and the snare line will trip, and the trip line.
Then you just have an alligator hanging, dangling from a tree, struggling.
Yes. And then
wow.
The fun begins.
What does that mean?
The fun begins that if he takes your line under the water, if he's a big enough gator, he'll take your line under the water.
Uh-huh.
And he'll stay there, and he'll burrow. He'll hide. Then you have to go under the water to get him. The way you do that is you feel your line. You grab your line that's attached to the hook line, and you trace it all the way down. Then you have to take a 22 rifle and get him to show his head. And if
so, you reel him in. You kind of fish him in from the line that he tripped, like just like a fish.
Exactly.
Only you had a chicken bait.
And he's under the water, hiding from you under mud and sticks and roots and trees.
Mm-hmm.
And if you really want him bad enough, you may have to go in and get him.
But you have you should get a shorter line sometimes, right? And then he doesn't go hide. Why do people make such a long line where you can take it underwater and go hide from you?
Well, a longer line is not always your best line, and a shorter line is not always your best line.
Mm.
A short line could pop quicker than a longer line.
Mm-hmm.
He won't bite a longer line.
You were also telling me how the way in which alligators like to kill their prey. It sounded terrifying. What do they do? If you're a swimmer swimming on the water, an alligator comes by, what's his attack?
His first attack is to run. They'll avoid you.
Okay.
The second thing is if he feel he's threatened, he'll grab you and take you underwater and begin to spin to drown you.
Right. So he's chomping down at you, your guts are coming out, and then he's just spinning you.
And he will spin and spin and spin.
Yeah.
Until you quit moving.
Oof.
Then he'll leave you alone, and he'll see you another day.
So you just float to the top, then just dead, and he just... Why doesn't he just eat you right there?
It's saving a meal for another day.
But you were saying they also...
He knows you're there.
Right.
He's going to come back for you. Especially when he smells you, your rotten, decaying body. He'll come back for you.
So alligators like rotten, decaying meat sometimes?
They like tin cans. They like Budweiser cans.
They
will
eat
anything and everything.
Uh-huh. Now, what else... What other troubles with gators did you get into? You were down in the bayou. You were living day to day... You know, didn't you have a friend who would, jump on them and stuff?
Yeah, like in the old Tarzan movie.
Mm-hmm. Why did
my
he cousin.
Do this?
Your cousin.
Because he could.
What's your cousin's name?
His name is Errol. He's
Errol?
From Bayou Gauche.
Whoa.
His mother, they live right across from Bayou Gauche. If you cross the road, you're in Bayou Gauche.
Yeah, yeah.
We used to go as kids swimming there.
And his name is Errol?
Errol.
Errol. Okay.
Errol. If you go there, there's my aunt owned a crab factory right across the street. They would fish crabs out of Bayou Gauche.
Mm-hmm.
And in Bayou Gauche, the only thing to do is fish and be bored. Well, to be funny, to be cute, which he knew the alligators he was jumping on.
Why would he do this? He would just jump on alligators.
For the fun of it, for the reaction he would get. He'd jump out of the pirogue, which is a wooden boat made out of trees.
Arrow would jump out of pirogues.
That you dump, you make out of trees. You dig them out of trees. You carve them out of trees.
Sure.
A pirogue. You jump out of the pirogue. He would. and grab onto an alligator and try to wrestle it into the pirogue, which it didn't always work, but it was fun. And
did he lose any fingers doing this?
No, never.
What?
Never.
Wow.
An alligator's first reaction is to run. The second reaction is to fight. Mm. Their way of fighting is to take you down and do the death row with
right.
you. Now, if you let them go, then it's even Steven.
Mm-hmm. Did you have any close calls with any gators, you know? Did any gators come
on
your property?
I was never crazy enough to jump on alligators.
Right, right, right.
I fed them, and when you feed them, you be careful of your fingers, because they have sharp teeth.
Uh-huh.
So, you can feed them, and many of people have lost fingers that have been doing it for years.
Mm-hmm.
Because an alligator is a reptile. You could feed it, walk it on a leash, and look cute, and say, yes, I've raised it from a baby, and it knows me, and it loves me, but it's still a reptile. Mm-hmm. It will turn on you. It will eat you in a split second.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they have no emotion. They don't care about your life. They're going to chop
They're
your...
cold-blooded.
Yeah. But what is a coon
see,
ass?
You don't know. A true coon ass is somebody
damn
that
good
lived on the bayou.
It's a damn good,
okay?
Good cook.
And
he's recording.
They live, breathe, fish.
Off the land.
And fight.
Off the land.
All off the land, yeah. They just.
Okay, so coon ass knows how to, you know, chop up a weasel. They know how to, you know. But
well,
they know how to live off the land.
We know how to cook off the land.
And catch an alligator and stuff like that, right?
No, we swim with the alligators.
You swim with the alligators.
Friends.
It's getting more interesting, pal. Mm-hmm.
All right, so this guy who's only identifying himself as Brad Pitt. what's your name, buddy?
Raphael.
Raphael, okay.
Yeah, I was born and raised on the bayous, awesome. And we used to build tree houses and things like that, you know, swing from trees and wonder what was that in the water. Well, in the water is an alligator.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we learn how to cook them. We learn how to swim with them. We learn how to dive with them. Mm-hmm. But anyway, the question is...
Your best gator story.
You
Did you encounter a gator where there was
okay.
trouble?
One time, friends and I got together on a little speedboat, and we said, let's go skiing. So we went skiing. Well, I just so happened to be at the end of the rope skiing. And I got on top of the water, and I felt like a big old guy. And then all of a sudden, we turned down this bayou, which was haunting looking. But anyway, we kept skiing, and we ended up to where it was a dead end. So the boat had to slow down to turn around, and I get back up on my skis. Well, what happened was that when he slowed down and he turned the boat around, and I was floating in the water, I noticed around me there was a bunch of gators.
Oh, dear.
And they were swimming towards me.
Oh.
And I said, go, go, please go, please go. So my friend took off, and when we took off, I just so happened to get up on my skis, but all these gators were surrounding me. And, well, we made it out of there. But anyway.
Excuse me.
Anyway, the story is we were down the, what we call the gator pit.
Mm-hmm.
The gator pit is a dead-end bayou, and all you have is alligators. Well, the alligators here are not like crocodiles. The crocodiles will be aggressive and attack you, and the gators here, they'll just look at you and swim up to you. But you think they're going to eat you, but they won't.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway...
Oh, cool.
Here's
yeah.
the next question.
you would milk snakes for money, right? You were telling me that earlier. What does that mean?
Well, on the bayou, there's lots of ways to make money, get food. At night, we would go out with a bull eye, which is a light on your head that you would find the eyes of snakes, alligators, lizards, and frogs.
You flash it in the light in their eyes. They get kind of dazed, hypnotized by it, and then boom, you get them.
Right. We used to go, we call it frogging,
uh-huh.
or we're going out hunting alligators, or hunting lizards, or hunting snakes. Now, with the snakes, we would milk the snakes, take the venom and send it off to companies that would use the venom to turn it into anti-venom.
How do you get them? How do you get venom from a snake?
Well,
you make out with them and spit it out.
We don't kiss them. We take a jar and stretch a little bit of rubber or paper over the top of the jar with a rubber band holding the paper onto the jar. You grab the snake from behind the head, make it show its fangs, and pop its fangs into the glass on the edge and pull it toward you and make it release its venom.
Grabbing the head, see, that's... You know, that's where the tricky part is, right? You know, have you ever got bit by a snake doing this? you're just grabbing wild snakes, right, in the bayou.
Well, there's a certain way to grab snakes and catch snakes. I've gotten bitten millions of times, never by any cottonhead or anything poisonous. Those you take extra care with. Mm-hmm. Rat snakes, corn snakes, water moccasins are not really poisonous, but their bite, their mouth is so infected with different bacteria, it can kill you.
Whoa.
And we used to swim with them, by the way.
Just with water moccasins?
Well, when you
go... Do they not bother you if you don't bother them?
No, they... No, they're different than an alligator.
They're aggressive.
If you're in its territory, and it feels threatened, it will bite you.
That's awesome. Cool.
But when you have a nice, nude young lady that you're skinny dipping with, we don't think about the snakes so much. So we throw rocks in the water and splash around as much as possible.
And then you tell the chick, it's safe. And then let's definitely get naked now.
And then we're okay.
Velcro. I'm gonna pop some tags. Only got $20 in my pocket.
After giving me that interview, Raphael just... Daryl came out and goes, hey, Raphael, you got a hot table. He went in to go pool hustle him. Like, he's clocking in for work now. What great characters. God, I love New Orleans. Highway Diary, we're on a ghost tour with FrenchQuarterPhantoms.com.
I do want to talk about this building across the street from us. This is the old Wallery Mansion, and as I said, it still contains the name of the original owner of the house. It's the 1820s, it's the 1830s in the city of New Orleans. Delphine Wallery is one of the most famous women in the city of New Orleans. She's grown up in an incredibly wealthy family. Her first two marriages had ended not in divorce, but in her being widowed. She has an enormous wealth, and actually her third marriage is finally one where she gets to pick her own husband. She will meet the young man known as Louis Lawlery, who is visiting the city of New Orleans when he is celebrating graduating from medical school. He's from Toulouse, France. He's young, he's handsome, he's a doctor. He seems very exotic, and Delphine decides that's what she wants for her birthday that year. She is going to pursue this 20-year younger man throughout the city of New Orleans very publicly, very scandalously, and said that the way she let Dr. Lawlery know that she might be a little bit interested was when she spied him on the floor seats of the old French opera house. She was up in her private box seats on the balcony, decided to come all the way downstairs and plant herself strategically in his lap to get his attention. It is considered the first recorded cougar attack in the city of New Orleans.
I'm hunting, looking for a come up. This is fucking awesome. What you know about rocking the wolf on your noggin?
That the cook is still in the kitchen. She's an old slave woman, and it looks like she's been very badly abused, that she's been beaten regularly. They'll try to carry her out of there. She's passed out from inhaling all of this smoke, but at first they can't. You see, she's got a cuff on her ankle. There's a chain running to the stove, only about 10, 12 foot of chain on it. She's literally held in place in that kitchen. They end up breaking the chain, taking her out to the street. And when they revive her, they begin to ask her what happened in that kitchen. She's going to tell them that, as they suspected, she's the one who started the fire in the house. Now, this is going to come as a shock to those firefighters. In the French Quarter in those days, this is still mostly a Catholic city. It's not the kind of place where you'd commit suicide no matter what was happening, because that puts your immortal soul at risk in the afterlife. They're shocked that she's going to admit to this. They're going to ask her why she would risk hell. She's going to tell them she's not afraid of hell. She's been in hell since the first day that she was brought into this house. That it's hell run by Delphine Lawlery. She's convinced that Delphine isn't even a human being, that she's the devil in human flesh. In that windowless room, they're going to discover that the Lawleries have been doing little medical experiments On those slaves, they had not worked out to Delphine's satisfaction. The walls of the room are lined with shelves. On those shelves, human body parts preserved in alcohol from those earlier experiments. They'll find human heads, hands, feet, jars of eyeballs, and in one particularly gruesome case, they're going to discover what at first looks like a long cloth bandage floating in the alcohol. It's not a cloth bandage. It's a 2.5-inch wide strip of human flesh, some 15 feet long. Apparently, one of the earlier experiments by the Lollaries was to see how long someone could live without skin. They had taken one of their slaves and, starting in a spiral pattern at the top of the man's head, had peeled him like an orange, keeping that long strip of human flesh intact. They'd gotten rid of the body, but they'd preserved that little trophy from their experiment. They will find two bodies lying on vivisection tables side by side. They're covered with sheets. When they remove those sheets, they see the victims of the latest Lollary experiment. It's a pair of victims, slaves, a male and a female slave. The Lollaries had apparently attempted a very primitive sort of sex change operation, moving sexual organs from one to the other. Of course, neither of them had survived that experiment. But on her deathbed, she was heard cursing the people of the city of New Orleans for driving her out over something as paltry as the lives of a few slaves.
One man's trash, that's another man's come up. Thank your granddad for donating.
So we went to the La Alboraja, which is a big casino in Lake Charles, Louisiana. I think that's just about all there is there.
No, you're forgetting there's a chemical plant. Right?
Oh, yeah.
Right across the river from it.
There's miles and miles and miles of marsh, then a chemical plant right next to a luxurious casino.
Yep. And then there's a outdoor swimming pool there, too, that overlooks the chemical plant.
Yeah, like right across the stream from the Mississippi, there's a chemical plant. But on the casino side, oh, you can do some lovely sunbathing, you know, get your chemical peels, whatever you need to, right on the beach.
Some acid rain. Really good for your skin.
There was a guy fishing out there. Yeah, like, could he not see the goddamn chemical plant?
It's gross.
Gonna pull in something and eat it and have like four testicles the next day, you know?
Right. Like, the fish are not restricted to just upstream from the chemical plant. The fish are swimming all around, so I don't know what you're thinking. You're just upstream from the chemical plant. Whatever you're pulling out of that river is contaminated.
Yeah. Unbelievable. And also, it's like, if I could just look out at a bunch of marsh from my balcony window, I'd feel great. And if you go 5 miles down the road, that'd be very easy. But for some reason, I guess the land was cheaper next to the chemical plant. So they're like, meh, what the hell? No one's going to notice. But anyway, so we went down to the casino. It's pretty much all there was to do there. But we went to play some craps. And we go in, playing craps is actually really intimidating at first for those, because I've only played it once before. Craps is a really complicated game, you know, it's like the stock market. You can bet 9 different ways. You can bet on, like, exact rolls of a dice. You can bet on numbers that aren't in play. You just bet anything, and then also, like, if you make a bet, I made a bet once, and then lady at the casino was like, no, you can't place that bet. They will immediately tell you, like, you have no idea what you're talking about. I don't know what this customer wants. And, like, if the manager looks at them, I don't know what this customer wants now. They're asking me to do it. It's like, all right, settle down. I don't know what I'm talking about. Don't let everybody know I'm an idiot. You know what I'm saying? It's intimidating.
Place. Eric got heckled, too. Apparently, one man was not impressed by his rolling.
I didn't hear that. What happened?
Oh, you didn't hear that?
I didn't hear the heckle.
Oh, that guy. Oh, he was real pissed off because Eric rolled the dice, I think, like 3 times or something, and then it cleared the table.
Yeah, I got a 7, which if you roll a 7 the first time, then everybody wins. If you roll again, the problem is the 7 is the most likely number that's going to get rolled. And then it's like, you know. And also, I won 2 games already for the table. I won 2 games. I got a 7.
I'm just saying, that guy was not impressed.
The first roll I did, boom, 7, right? Okay, everybody wins.
He left the table. He was so pissed off with your roll. I'm
like, yo. Actually, also, when we first got there was a lot of action at the table. One guy was whooping. He was going, woo, woo.
He just won, like, $1,200.
He won $1,200, yeah. And this old scrappy Louisiana lady was like, you know, one of these 50-year-old kind of working professional ladies who was like, I'm here to gamble.
Like, working professional lady. Like, she was a hooker?
No. Like, a real estate agent or
just
something.
Just a working girl.
She's a working girl. She's still working at her age. Well done to you. What power to you, lady. But, yeah, and also she gave me $10 once, you know.
She did?
Yeah, she threw, because I was betting, and she was like, oh, she just won a couple pots, and she's like, oh, here you go, and she, like, doubled my bet, and then it immediately got lost. You know, she just put $10 more on my, the minimum bet was 10. Now, Emily, you play conservative craps, right?
Yeah, conservative craps.
What does that mean?
It's just when you play the pass line. I doubled my money, but the thing is, you have to have patience. You can't go making all different bets.
Now, do you skip some games?
Nope. I play every game.
You play every game.
On the pass line. And the pass line is you double your money if you win it. And basically, you win every time except if the table clears. So it's a good bet. And it just takes a while to make a lot of money. Like, you're never going to win $1,200 unless you put down $600. But it works, man. Patience.
I have zero patience. I was playing like a lunatic. The second I learned one bet, I was like, oh, that sounds like a great bet. Boom, gone. But I was up and down, like the stock market. I was up like probably, so I was betting with 50. I was definitely up to 90 once. And then boom, I walked out of there with nothing. So I was playing the table, but I was like, hey, let's get some champagne up in this bitch. I'm bored, you know? I was up that fat for a minute, and then, gant, all gone.
You were up $40, and you wanted to order a bottle of champagne.
Well, I know if I got 40 now, and it took me 1 hour, or, you know, I'm going to have, now that I'm learning as well, I'm going to have $300 in 2 hours. You know what I mean? I, like, plan for accelerated achievement. They give you everybody these comp cards, these comp player cards, and what they're supposed to do is, as you go around gambling, you can accrue like drinks or stuff or like free dinner. You know, in the old mob days, you know, the manager would just come over, hey, I see you spend a lot of money. You're doing what you're doing. How about a dinner on us? You're a preferred customer now. You know, that's how they did in the old. And then if you, you know, stole anything, they'd break your kneecaps and bury you in the desert. But nowadays, they give you comp cards instead, you know. And so you just kind of give it to the craps person, or you'd stick it in your slot machine, you know, so the slot machine's counting off all the stuff. But I think that the system at the La Barrage is kind of shitty. These comp cards are just a big waste of time, because we went for breakfast the next day after I spent $50, dropping $50. Hello, comp card. I spent $50. Give me free breakfast. But it asked me for a PIN number. Actually, Emily signed up for the card. You had to put in your mailing address, all your information, your social security.
They actually take your license and they swipe your license. They get all of your information from your driver's license.
Why does the hotel need all your information?
So they can send you mailers constantly and sell your phone number, probably.
Yeah, to some kind of data, you know, some kind of sales lead banks. Just a bank of telemarketers can, you know, start calling you up for casino bullshit. Anyways, I go to redeem this card, and then they ask me, oh, what's the PIN number? But you didn't give a PIN number.
They didn't ask me for one.
Yeah, and then they're like, oh, you want to redeem it? What's the PIN number? And then they give me this card, which is like, well, fill out your PIN number. Well, when they give you a card, you don't have to sign up for one. We're on to your La Barrage. We want you to go back to mob rule and just have a sweaty, greasy guy walk around and say, you've been spending a lot of money here. Here's your free breakfast, you know? That's how it should run. Greasy men. More greasy men in casinos, please. I mean, I don't want to get political here, but Jesus Christ, someone figure it out. That's what we want. I hit the party and they stop in that motherfucker. So speaking of breakfast, I got myself some huevos rancheros, and which is great. It's great to get like refried beans when you're on vacation, especially when you're around elevators, because you can put on some really hot, great hot steam in the elevators, you know. And my best trick. This is a little travel tip for you guys. when you guys are in, getting in the elevator and you want to give someone hot steam, announce to them hot steam as the door is closing so they can entertain with their mind, oh, maybe I could have got out if I realized a moment earlier that I was about to get farted on, I could escape. So, like, you know, I'm just like, oh, hey, Emily, as I'm hitting the button, just what? Oh, I'm going to blow hot steam. Boom, door closes. Then you fart. Perfect. I gave you a little hot steam. What do you think about that, Em?
I think you're fucked up. I think I owe you a punch in the face. I'm going to hold your head down next hotel. This is what's going to happen.
Lay it on me.
You're going to fall asleep. I am going to wait till you're sleeping. Wait till you're good and dreaming. I'm going to hold your head down. I'm going to sit on your head, and I'm just going to lay into you. Like, right in your ear. The biggest hot steam all over your face.
Hot steam!
You have it coming.
All right, well, that's not going to happen. I'm a very light sleeper. The second you put one hand on my mattress, boom, I'm wide awake.
I'm going to put it right on your face, and I'm going to hold it down.
I'm going to put a dummy head right at my ass. So as you sit on my ass to give my face hot steam, boom, I'm going to be giving you hot steam. So there's going to be a dummy head right there.
What?
You said you're going to go fart in my head.
Yeah.
I'm going to sleep upside down. I'm going to put a dummy head on my ass. You're going to sit on my ass to get hot steam. Boom, I'm going to fart right back up your butt.
Whatever. I'm gonna hot steam the shit out
of
you.
I'm going to give you fucking... It's going to be like a hot steam sauna back in the hotel. It's going to be like, are these hot steam springs natural here?
I'm going to... go in there like, hot steam! Wake you up, and then you're gonna be like, what? What?
I'm gonna fog the glass, man. I'm gonna walk right in the door, boom, hot steam so hard right near the door as it's closing that the glass that I'm not even facing is gonna steam up immediately. So much hot steam's in my ass. Not a lot of politics this episode. Maybe next episode. So, speaking of, well, we're going to have some more poo talk. And also, Emily is more of a world traveler. Now, right now, we're traveling across America. But Emily actually just came back from India. She goes to India for a job every now and then. And the toilet situation's way different in India. What's going on there?
No, they have normal toilets. But in every bathroom, there's a bucket. So, every bathroom I went in... like in the hotel, there's a bucket there. So I was like, okay, maybe the cleaning crew forgot to take this bucket. I go in another bathroom, there's a bucket again. Then I'm out traveling, like we're sightseeing. A bucket in every bathroom I go in.
What are these buckets for?
That's what I wanted to know. So I finally asked someone, I was like, what the hell are these buckets for? And apparently.
Like, is the bucket for pee pee, the bowl for poo poo?
So apparently the bucket is for cleaning your ass. But the weird thing is that there's no paper towels in most of these bathrooms. So I still don't quite understand. So they use the bucket, they clean their ass after they poop.
With their hands. They're like using their hands and the water?
I guess so.
There's no washcloth.
Well, there's a sink and some soap, so I'm assuming that they wash their hands after they wash their butts.
Right.
But,
do you, like, are you supposed to hold the bucket up and then pour a stream of water down your ass?
Well,
or?
Here's how I'm thinking it must go down. Because I didn't see anyone come out of there with, like, pants just with a huge wet stain down the butt. So, here's what I'm thinking
how
this happens.
They gotta sit them down somehow.
They must have to take off their pants, squat over the bucket, use their hand, wash their butt out, let it dry... for a while, and then put their pants back on. I don't see any other.
You think
way.
They drip dry their butt?
I think they drip dry their butt for a while. I don't know. Can't get in the bathroom while their butt's drying.
So is everyone? Is the bucket getting the water freshened up between everybody? You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean there's a sink in there. I'm sure that they changed.
So
the
it's
water.
Your own responsibility to. But then with your shitty hands, you know, you're going to move a bucket. You know, you got shit all over your hands. You're just washing your hands. You got your hands in a bucket of water. That's what you're working with. then you're just holding this shit bucket and bringing it to the sink and pouring out the water and refreshing the water. God damn it.
Yep.
So, but some places had toilet paper as well?
All places had toilet paper. Just not a lot of places had hand towels.
So,
I guess they could use toilet paper to dry off. But
right.
It just, you know, take a lot of toilet paper.
Yeah, I mean, if you're getting your whole ass wet.
Yeah.
Need a towel.
Right.
Maury Povich, the pregnancy tests are always pretty exciting.
Yeah, those always get me hooked for a while. And then they do a teaser of the next one. You're like, damn it, I really want to know who the daddy is.
Yeah, because they play you this background package of the kid.
Yeah.
You know, and the kid is...
tough. But it's tough. When you start watching that, you're basically invested for the entire day until they stop doing that marathon, because you just have to know who the daddy is.
Yeah, because then they always play the teaser of the next episode, and they're like, and the father is, and you just see this guy with his eyes. It's like, I'm either going to have to pay $200,000 in the next 18 years or nothing. You know what I mean? So it's like, either I wipe my hands of this bitch, get out of there. But also, what I find so disturbing about those pregnancy tests is they have this, like, two-year-old baby, couldn't be more innocent, just brought into this world, you know, wants a dad or whatever, you know? And then, you know, when the dad isn't the father, he's like, yes, yes, screaming, I hate you, I told you, baby face. Look, just look at the baby face, you know? And then, obviously... then that kid grows up later, and it's like, see, he was cheering. He didn't want to be your dad so much. He was jumping up and down. God, you know, it's got to be very permanently psychologically damaging to be on that show.
Well, I hope that none of those babies ever see any of that footage.
Yeah, of like, especially when there's like 15 guys all take the pregnancy test from one chick. It's like, whoa. You know?
Paternity test.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. 15 guys all take a paternity test, and then it's like, you are not the father. Oh, I told you. Oh, I know who it is now. I know who it is now. And then they have that guy on. It's not him. I know who it is now. I know who it is now. I have that guy on. It's not him. I've seen up to 8 before. You get caught on those marathons, man. Yeah, 8. And the thing is, you know, obviously...
8 potential daddies.
Exactly. It took till the 8th guy before they got him. But also, you can test what day the baby was consummated on, you know what I mean, pretty easily now. So, you know, you're within 2 or 3 days of figuring out when the mom did the deed to birth the kid.
Well, I guess it's hard to remember what day you slept with who and when, what day on the calendar it was when, you know, you're on a little bender.
Yep, you're on a little data bender.
I get that, baby mamas.
Baby mamas out there, we feel for you. Go find those baby daddies. Go find them.
Here's a little trick. Just mark it on your calendar.
Yeah.
Put their initials on there.
And their social security number and current mailing
their address. Yeah.
You send them and you subpoena their asses.
Right. Got the proof in the calendar.
Boom. I also wonder, like, when you're doing the paternity test, obviously with Maury, the incentive is go and they'll pay for your hotel room, give you an $80 per diem, and you be on TV. Great. So everybody wants to do it. But I wonder how many, like, dads... I mean, can your blood be subpoenaed for DNA testing?
Oh, yeah.
You can subpoena someone's blood?
Well, you just subpoena the person, and then they're investigated.
But they get... I wonder how many people skip town when they get subpoenaed. You know?
I don't know.
Because, so it's like, it's illegal to, you like have to go give your blood then when you get subpoenaed?
Yeah. Or not always your blood, but they can take a swab of your mouth too.
Oh, okay.
Damn. And they actually have those tests at Walgreens.
Oh, really?
Yeah, they have baby daddy tests at Walgreens.
Well, yeah, you don't even have to go to Maury. What I'm telling you, baby mamas, is go around with a Q-tip, swab some mouths, put them in some Ziplocs, and find that baby daddy.
Yeah, right.
We know you're going on a baby daddy bender, maybe.
That's a better strategy, actually. Like, carry around some little vials, suck face with them, spit in the vial, get his DNA in there, mark down his name, You won't even have to track him down.
Yeah.
You won't even have to go on Maury.
Just be like, hey, baby, I think there's something in your teeth, and just swab his mouth real quick. Boom, Ziploc that shit. We have a little work segment here. Emily, you got yourself in trouble at an old company because of Instant Messenger, right?
Yeah, so we use Instant Messenger at pretty much every company I've worked at to communicate with your coworkers. It's fast, it's easy. So, this is my second job out of college. My best friend worked there, too. She got me the job there. This is my best friend since, like, first grade. And, so, we'd be constantly IMing each other throughout the whole day. So, one morning, talked to my boss. He's having me rearrange this report again. Like, every time. This is like the third time I've rearranged this report. I do it exactly as he requested it each time, but he just changes his mind every time that he sees the new layout. He decides that, oh, maybe this column should actually be over here. Anyway, so, of course, as soon as I get done with this conversation, I start bitching to Liz about it over Instant Messenger. So I'm saying, God, I can't believe that, you know, my boss is having me rearrange this report for the third time.
You're getting, like, real specific.
Yeah. This is the third time that I've had to rearrange this report. He talks to me in this condescending voice. Like, that's supposed, you know why this report is important, right? And it just makes more sense that this column is over here. Like, that's supposed to make me forget about the fact that this is the third time that he's had me rearrange it. Like, he has no idea how he wants this report to
be. He just keeps changing his mind.
What a waste of time this is. You know.
And it's not like he's getting outside notes. It's just he keeps on.
No, this is his own reaction to his own layout.
Yeah.
That I just keep making the changes for him.
Yeah. So you're laying out this. You're just laying into
it. I'm just going off. I'm just think I'm, you know, I'm bitching my friend Liz about it. I'm like, this is stupid. God, it's first thing in the morning. Can't believe he's having me do this again. You know, what the fuck? And I'm like, why isn't Liz writing back to me? So, I know she's sitting at her desk. I'm looking at her, you know.
You're looking for her reaction, like, you know.
Yeah, I'm like, come on.
Yeah.
I see you. Why aren't you writing back to me? I double-check the Instant Messenger box, and it's my boss.
Goddamn.
I am my boss, complaining about my boss. As soon as I realize that, I write, oh my God, into the IM box, and I run and go and hide under Liz's desk.
Just, I'm out of here.
Yeah.
There's no getting back from that.
Holy crap. I don't know what to do.
She's just sighing. Yeah. In a supply closet for 8 hours until the day goes.
That day, my boss was actually in our New York office. I was in our Jersey office. And he was on the phone with my coworker. And I just hear her just stop and say, hello? Are you still there? And, she said that he just had started laughing like crazy on the line. And he told her he said, tell Emily she just made my day. That was the funniest thing that I've ever seen. Thank God.
Yeah. It's good he was cool with it.
Yeah. He was an awesome boss. This is fucking
awesome. And then you jumped on his antique horse and got white girl drunk. And we're like, woo!
No, not that guy.
Oh, okay.
But I did do something else embarrassing with this boss.
What?
So one time I was in his office, and I don't know why, but we were
talking. I remember this story.
This is so
this
embarrassing.
Is so weird.
It is so weird. I don't know why this happened. We were talking about something, just work stuff, I don't know. And I don't know why, but my face made a kissy face at him. I made a kissy face at him.
So you were just doing normal stuff. Okay, yeah, I'll get that report. I'll rearrange it for you. I'll put the column where you want it.
Yeah.
Okay. What? How did he react to the kissy
face? He goes, what was that? Get out. Get out of my office. He was laughing, though. He was like, that was weird.
Your face just involuntarily made a kissy face.
And then I immediately go, what did my face just do?
Then you hid under Liz's desk.
And then I ran out of there and I hid under Liz's desk.
You gotta stop embarrassing yourself and hiding.
I don't know what happened.
You gotta face the consequence. You gotta face the music after you make a mistake.
I have a getaway strategy. It's worked every time.
Where are the exits? I'm out of here.
Where's Liz's desk? I'll be under there for a while.
You're going to subpoena my DNA? I'm out. It's only got $20 in my pocket. Lake Charles, not much there. Chemical plant, casino. What the fuck do you want from me? It's a casino plus a ridiculous hotel that's like, you can have your face shaved there, you can have your shoe shined, or buy a gift bag that said, I spent a lot of ridiculous money at Le Barrage, and my comp card didn't work, you know? What else is there? Nothing. Getting swindled and pimped. Teacher in New York City traded soap for homework. His name is Marlon Scanterbury. He's a New York cop, and basically he made his own soap company, and he told the kids, hey, you buy my soap, boom, free homework pass. That's pretty. So he was making a killing, because then all the kids were like, all right, and it was a well-to-do neighborhood. A lot of the kids could afford, like, to get 3 soaps a week and just not do homework and just stockpile the soap at their house.
Is this a private school or a public school?
A public school. But like a well-to-do, in a New York City, like an affluent area in New York City.
Right. Stupid. That's just dumb. Like, you don't think that's going to get out?
I know. Oh, you know what? I remember one teacher in our high school, actually. He didn't give out homework for soap, but he did sleep with a student, right? And one of our high school teachers, coach, you know, one of the students, you know, was a bit of a floozy, let's just say. Really into the coach, you know, they got on. She was 18, high school, boom, they slept together. 3 years later, she's a porn star. And,
are you talking about the girls a year older than me?
Yep.
Yeah. She was on my soccer team.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I remember she would always, like, show us her thongs during soccer practice, like...
Hey, girls, here's my thong!
Yeah, I just be like, what the fuck? Like, put your thong away. I don't want to see that. I'm trying to play some soccer here. I have to look at your thong. She would also always make us do shirts versus bras. Like...
Such an exhibition.
Like, all the time. And this is, like, a public high school. And she's making us play in our bras.
Yeah.
She was a freak.
She's a freak. Yeah. You know what kind of crazy chances you gotta be taking to just make love to one of your teachers? Just boom. Let's just do this. This is happening now.
Anyway, it was not surprising when one day one of our fellow students was looking at some pornography online, and he was like, is that Jackie? That's Jackie.
Don't say her last name.
I don't even remember her last name. But yeah, no surprise there.
Nowadays, Jackie Cream Pie, look her up.
Yeah.
She's pretty great. Also, by all accounts, got really good grades. This is a great news story. Two men shot by their own dogs accidentally. So this is combining two different stories. There's a 55-year-old French hunter who his dog, they were on a duck hunt, and his dog got all excited. Two dogs, you know, he had 3 dogs, this French hunter. He has 3 dogs. He blasts a duck, boom! 2 of them immediately go out. The one doesn't go there, and he goes, hey boy, go get it, but instead of going get the duck, he jumps on him and he blows his own right hand off, where the dog catches the trigger, blows the guy's right hand off. And another guy got shot by his dog, a 46-year-old American, because he had all of his shotguns just laying around with the safeties off, and his dog walked by it and stepped on it and then blew his foot off. So
he must have had them cocked too, like, you have, you know, if it's a pump action shotgun, you have to pump it in order for it to be armed. So he just had all these armed shotguns laying around.
Well, when you're duck hunting, you don't have time to pump, you know? The duck is there, boom, you want to blast it.
It's just weird. Why would he have them all laying out like that?
Yeah. I don't know. I wonder also if, like, there was a little bit of revenge going on, you know what I mean? Like, the dog was aiming for him. The dog, especially the one where the thing's laying on the ground. You know?
I don't know.
You think the dog was pissed off? You think it was... You had him chained up too long in the back? Hey, motherfucker. Get off my lawn. Boom! Just blasted him. Motherfucker. The building onesie with the socks on. All right, keeping with the dog theme. Here's another news story. I love this one. French dog poisoned and buried alive survives. So this French bulldog was hanging out, and the neighbor was getting really fed up with it. It doesn't say why. Maybe it's shitting in his lawn. Anyway, so this neighbor kidnaps this dog poisons it, injects it with poison, and then drives down the road somewhat and then buries it, like deep, right? So then this jogger is jogging by and goes by this and sees that the dirt is kind of shifting dirt a little bit. So he starts digging, and then he goes and gets a shovel and starts digging, and then he finds this pretty much dead dog there. And then the vet gets it, and it was freezing too. And then the vet gets it, gives it some water, and it starts walking around.
You can just imagine the neighbor, you know, who went through all this trouble to get rid of this dog.
I mean, he took the extra step to bury it. He didn't just poison it and just assume everything happened. He didn't just put, like, some cyanide in the puppy chow and go, oh, the deed's been done.
Then this dog comes home, he's like, you damn little devil dog. Thought I got rid of you for good this time.
If you're an assassin and you, like, poison a guy, bury him in the desert, and he comes walking in, you gotta shit yourself.
That's some Kill Bill shit.
That's some Kill Bill shit. Uma Thurman punching through a coffin and digging herself out of a grave. And that's exactly what this French bulldog did. This is Associated Press. This is hard news here, people.
Hard news. That's all we do here.
That's all we do here. Hard news. We do some Illuminati, some hot steam, and some hard news about some bulldog that gets buried. Boom, now it's alive.
Devil dog.
Highway Diaries. What's going on? I'm your host, Eric Hollerbach. This is episode 14, New Orleans. Now we're
Gators.
Now we're just leaving New Orleans. Oh my God, I am in love with that city.
Definitely one of the top cities in the U.S.
Oh my God, as soon as we drive in, the architecture just kicked me right in the dick. It's unbelievable. It's like, it's just like jazz in that all the architects, agree to a certain kind of style, a certain kind of aesthetic, but then each house, each building is like a different riff on that, right?
It's so beautiful.
It's so beautiful. You're driving around, and then I thought that it was only on Bourbon Street that you had those, like, second-tier thing, you know, where people are hanging out on the patio in the second, you know, thing, showing their tits or whatever. But a lot of the houses have that thing. And as you're driving around, all of those second-tier things are, like, so... There's so much, like, woodworking and ironwork that's, like, it's just incredible. It's a beautiful, beautiful city. And there's also a park in the middle, and we just walked through it, and there's all these artists that all have their badass art up on the fence around the park, and you just walk around. There's music playing.
We met two of these artists in our bar last night.
Yeah. You heard from some of them. We met Daryl and Raphael, who were pool hustlers, mystics. They were...
artists.
Yeah, but...
Coon asses.
We met two coon asses. Daryl and Raphael, you've heard from them. Wow, what characters, right?
They were really fun.
Yeah, and everyone in New Orleans is so sweet, so humble.
And really funny, too, because a lot of parts of this country, people are very nice. There's a lot of nice people everywhere. But in New Orleans, they have a great sense of humor. They're actually, like, really funny and really... interesting people.
Yeah, they know themselves. They're kind of like really like self-deprecating and just really humble, but yeah, super funny. Just just our kind of people. They're all kind of weird, you know. It's not the typical, like, southern town, right? New Orleans has a different thing going on because it was French settlers. Well, actually, we learned on the ghost tour that a lot of people that first came out were convicts. They sent a lot of convicts there, kind of like an Australia thing going on. And then it was really hard.
Pirates. A lot of pirates.
A lot of pirates there. And bootleggers.
Yep.
A lot of dens of iniquity were going on. They were making drugs. They were, you know, pirates, thieves, gamblers, gangsters. That's who moved in. And they had no women there. So, I don't know. No, I'm not going to just go into the vampire story.
I'll tell the vampire story.
Go on.
So they had no women in New Orleans, and all there was like 90% men. And I guess the women who were there were married, so there was no available women there.
Yeah.
So the townspeople started complaining about
this. They were writing their mayor. Where's the goddamn women in this
town? Send us some women. For God's sake, send us some women.
Yeah.
So they ended up sending 7 girls. It was really hard to get European women to agree to come to this little outpost in, you know, the New World.
Yeah, all the society girls in France are eating, you know, nice pastries, living in Paris, and they're like, why would I want to go to a swampy shithole town?
They have disease there. It's filled with pirates. They're like, no, thank you.
Yeah.
So they start sending these letters. So they were working on this for about 3 years. They finally got 7 girls to agree to come to the New World, settle in New Orleans.
New Orleans.
And but they didn't want, you know, the entire town to just descend on these girls as soon as they got off the ship.
There were some stir-crazy pirates there that were just going to take some booty if they wanted some.
Right. So they unload these girls from the ship in the middle of the night. They had to bribe these women to get them to come to the New World. So they came with these basically dowry boxes that were about 6 foot long, about 2 feet high, and 2 feet wide or something like that. They're basically in the shapes of coffins, but not intentionally. They're filled with nice gowns, you know, luxurious china, all this great stuff that these women, you know, they wouldn't have gotten this if they had stayed in Europe. These were the sort of lower class women. So, you know, coming for a good chance at, you know, marrying a rich guy or whatever.
So they get on the boat and they get all pale on their boat ride. And
right, it's a 3-month journey. They're skinny, they're pale, they're kept under the deck the entire time.
They're malnourished. They probably got scurvy, their gums are receding.
So they unload these women in the middle of the night, and they're going to the convent in the middle of the night. They're walking down the street with these wagons carrying these boxes. So it wakes up the whole town because, you know, there's no one really traveling on these roads in the middle of the night. They just see these pale, skinny girls walking down the street in the middle of the night with these casket-looking boxes.
Yeah, 6 of them, 14 years old, all pale with... googly eye, which is carried by a procession of coffins.
Right. So they get to the convent, and then it just so happened another outbreak of one of these diseases came out. People start dying. So the townspeople correlate the arrival of these girls to all these deaths that are now occurring. So they think that, obviously, these girls are vampires.
Natural conclusion.
Right. So they get a good mob going. They bring their pitchforks and their fire torches, and they come down to this convent.
We're gonna burn these vampires!
Burn these witches. Burn these vampires. So,
not a lot. There's not TiVo back then. You know, you want to have a good evening out, you burn some vampires.
Right. So they, yelling and screaming outside the convent. They try to break down the door, but the devil has cursed it. It's a fortress. They can't get inside, so they call the priest. The priest comes, he gets inside, no problem, you know, with the force of God. He opens the door, he shuts it right behind him.
They hear all this clanging, all these pans being thrown, all the townspeople are just salivating, what's going on? I want to see a vampire get burned.
Saying, be damned, you evil spirits from hell. You know, he's yelling and screaming, making all sorts of noise.
These girls have never seen the light of day. All of a sudden there's a mob out there. They're frightened.
Right, so he stomps up the stairs. Turns out that they're lowering the girls out the window, out the back side of the convent. In the meantime,
Yeah, the priest knows he has to satiate the crowd, so he puts on this big dramatic display of, and now I'm nailing the coffin shut. Boom, boom, and he just has his hammer, and the crowd's going nuts. They can only hear, you know, what's going on.
Right. So he comes out, and he basically just says, fear not, I have locked these vampires into the attic of the convent. They're never getting out by the grace of God. They won't trouble this town any longer.
And that folklore of vampires locked in the attic, don't go in that building, and definitely don't go in the attic because there are vampires there, has lasted for hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of years until some people found out through scholarly notes that actually what happened there is what we just described. The nuns were trying to keep the chastity of these girls safe from the angry mob who wanted to burn them. And then if they found out they weren't vampires, probably just get in there, get them some.
Right, so these girls escaped. They got back on the boat, and then they went to Savannah or something.
Yeah, so then the
proper ladies.
Yeah, so then what they started doing is they started, New Orleans was like, all right, that didn't work. Well, we need some ladies in here. So then they basically, New Orleans mayor said, if you bring me some ladies, I'll give you some cash. So then they started rounding up some prostitutes. They started rounding up, you know, a lot of people got wind of this and just started rounding up women and sending them off.
Just kidnapping women.
Just clonking them over the head and bringing them in a sack. Where's my cash? I brought a lady. But that actually worked. And then, the hookers and the pirates got along quite well. The hookers did very well for themselves. And, you know, eventually sort of a city happened.
That's New Orleans.
New Orleans. Little New Orleans history. $20 in my pocket. So New Orleans is such an incredible party town, right, Emily? I mean, just bars after bars after bars.
You know how to party.
They throw down in New Orleans. And we ran into this group on our ghost tour of a bunch of 50-year-old women who were heckling during the ghost tour. They were getting loud. They were getting rowdy. And you asked them, like, what are you guys doing here?
They were celebrating their 50th birthday party. Like, a lot of these women, they've all known each other since, like, the fifth grade, they said. I just thought that was so cool.
Yeah.
Every decade, they just
get together
crazy
with your girlfriends. Don't fall out of touch. Get back together with your girlfriends and cut it loose.
I just thought that was so cool because I'm actually, for my 30th birthday, it's coming up in June. I'm friends with all my high school girlfriends. We've actually been friends more since, like, middle school, and we're all going to Vegas.
Whoa.
So I could just see myself doing the same thing that they're doing when I'm 50.
Why stop? Every 10 years, at least, do a blowout crazy shit.
Yeah. It's awesome.
Keeps your mind, you know, cool. Keeps you being a cool grandma. If you want to be a cool grandma, don't just be like, oh, I stayed inside, I got really bitter by the oven, and I cooked the cookies. No. You want to be a cool grandma, go to New Orleans and get rowdy during a ghost hunt, you know, a ghost walk through the city.
Eric offered them a joint.
And they were like, how did you know?
They apparently got super baked before the ghost tour.
Yeah, they're like, we're already high as fuck, but thank you. And then actually, then we passed this around a second one, and then one of them, like, gave me the stink eye because she didn't get in on it. And then also, we gave them a joint, and then they were like, let me pay you. And I was like, get out of here. They wanted to buy stuff off us. And I'm like, no, it's just puff, pass. Them's the rules. And then one of them threw money down my shirt, you know?
Yeah, Eric got cougar attacked.
I got cooned out. Cougared out. I get cougared out wherever I go. It's an issue.
Eric has a hard time judging the age of women.
Come on.
He either goes way too young. See, he met a 20-year-old girl last night.
Yeah?
Or way too old. Last time we went out, he met a 32-year-old girl. Woman.
39 once.
39? She was 39?
Yeah.
Dang.
I don't know, you know? Girls with their makeup and their hairstyles, I don't know.
As soon as I looked at this woman, I knew.
She was middle-aged.
This is an old bitch.
She's pushing over the hill.
Eric's like, wow. I don't know.
But here's the other thing. If a girl is German, it kind of knocks a couple years off. I don't know. That accent gets going and
just into that.
I'm just into that. What's wrong with that? There's nothing wrong with that. So after the ghost tour, we heard, we stayed at the Hotel Provincial, so just in case you want to look that up, in the French Quarter. Beautiful hotel, incredible. And then we get on a ghost tour, which is, starts around the corner at Flanagan's, this pub. And so then eventually they make us, the ghost tour ends up going right to our hotel. And he starts talking about how our hotel, during the Civil War, actually, the Union soldiers heard that New Orleans was totally defenseless. A bunch of French people hanging out, you know, drinking coffee, not necessarily putting up the best military
defense. Just partying all the
time. Just partying, doing some voodoo, shaking a dead chicken at a cat's face, doing some voodoo, weird shit's going on. They don't really have a military. So the Union Army actually went all the way down the Mississippi, immediately took over. They just kind of showed up with the cannons, and then New Orleans was like, I quit. Okay, we're a Union
white
city
flag.
Now. We don't give a fuck. Yeah, white flag. Here you go. You want a cappuccino? Here you go. All right, now we're taking over. So they immediately got taken over, and our hotel was the top. This is where all the generals would go if they got injured. It was a really good hospital. And so we learned about that. And so we learned that there was a ghost surgeon, a Confederate ghost surgeon, in our hospital.
In our hotel. Eric, okay, so...
So we... And let's actually hear from our ghost tour guide about that. I'm staying here with Robert, my tour guide, my ghost tour guide. Just told me that my hotel room, the exact building, the Provincial Hotel, Building 5, is haunted by Dr.
Edward Burkitt. He was a doctor from Boston, Massachusetts, who served as a Union military doctor here during the time that the city was occupied during the Civil War.
Now, you said something interesting. During the Civil War, the Union soldiers came right down here and took it over without any fight whatsoever.
There was a little bit of fighting with a Union naval force further south at a place called Fort Jackson. But for the most part, the city's defenses were very poor. The Union forces pretty much captured the city itself without a fight.
So this doctor during the Civil War would treat a lot of gangrene patients.
Yes. As the war wore on and these troops were being sent back for surgery at his hospital, he ended up seeing more and more gangrene patients, men who'd been infected as they traveled through the bayous to get back to the city itself.
Right. And then he would have to amputate, and that was his main procedure.
He was doing almost exclusively amputations after about 1862. If any kind of wound had gotten infected, which was very common at the time, they would do amputation as a preventative measure to try to save the life, but very often the patients wouldn't survive anyway. The gangrene had simply spread beyond where the original wound was.
And he still walks the halls today, yes, looking for his patients.
It's said that he does visit those people back in the building that you're staying in on a regular basis, mistaking the people staying in the rooms for those patients prepped for his surgeries. He's said to be a really horrific figure that comes prepared to do a little bit of surgery on the guests in the hotel, laying out his instruments, getting ready to saw off that arm or a leg.
Okay. All right. Thanks, man. We'll look out for him tonight. After I heard that the hotel was haunted, obviously, I thought, hey, here's an opportunity. Let's flick the recorder on.
Okay.
Not warn Emily.
No, we go party. We party for a while. I'm two hurricanes deep. I'm really exhausted from driving, traveling, and we sightseed.
You got a little sick.
I wasn't feeling well. I had a little head cold. Anyway, I'm all partied out by around midnight. So I go back to the hotel. Eric comes back with me and wants to get some stuff. And then he's going to hit the town again. But before he leaves, he decides to summon the surgeon ghost to our hotel room.
Let's give that a listen. So here is the seance, me summoning the ghost soldier. Hey guys, it's me. We're sitting in the Provincial Hotel, room 524. And we're here, Dr. Edward Bergen. If you're in this room, I need surgery.
I don't need surgery.
I definitely need surgery because I'll tell you why, Edward Bergen, Dr. Edward Bergen, Dr. Edward Bergen.
Stop it.
I need surgery because I got the gangrene. I got the gangrene. I was wounded. I was shot on the battlefield and I have gangrene. I might need an amputation.
Oh, God.
I might even need an amputation.
This is not me talking. This is Eric talking.
Dr. Edward Birkin, I got the gangrene. I don't know if I'm gonna make it. I'm a very frightened soldier. I'm a frightened soldier. Am I gonna make it? I came all the way down on the bayou to see you, Dr. Edward Birkin. Dr. Edward Birkin.
Stop it.
Dr. Edward Birkin. Dr. Edward Birkin.
Stop it.
Birkin surgeon. Birkin surgeon.
Stop it.
I got the gangrene. I got the gangrene.
I hate this.
Amputation. Amputation.
Shut up.
Chop. Chop.
Oh,
chop.
God.
Chop. You get the bandsaw out.
Don't do this. And you chop it, chop it, chop it. Right now.
I gotta go out and do some more partying, Emily.
God damn it.
We're in New Orleans.
Don't summon a ghost here and then leave.
All right. I'm gonna leave now. You get your scalpel and you chop whatever patient you find in here.
Don't.
Chop.
No.
She's got gangrene.
No, I don't.
And she's mighty bright.
I don't have gangrene.
He just
doesn't exist anymore.
You don't have what?
Shut up.
What don't you have?
Get out of here.
All right, I'll leave you.
Stop summoning ghosts here and then leaving.
I'm going to leave you in the good hands of Dr. Edward Birkin.
Shut up.
Dr. Edward Birkin.
Don't do
Dr. that. Dr. Edward Birkin.
Shut up.
We heard the tour guide told us all about you. All right, I'm going to leave you, and I guess we'll talk to you in the morning, guys. Highway Diaries. Okay, and we're back. So
then
that was
leaves.
Pretty fun.
Then he leaves.
Then I just split, yeah, because I figured, hey, you're sitting here, you're tired. I'm just going to, you know, if I can't give you company, what about a ghost surgeon?
So I'm totally freaked out. I turn on the television. I can't even sleep with the TV on, but... I turn it on because it feels better to have the TV on and all the lights on than to be in the dark with no noise. Basically, my eyes are just plastered open because I cannot shut them.
So you tried to get to sleep after that?
Yeah, I tried to sleep.
And then what happened?
I just felt like...
A presence?
A presence, yes. And I actually did fall asleep for a little while, but I had this terrible nightmare... And I just wake up in a cold sweat with my eyes completely open, like, oh my god, there's the surgeon here. He's here. He's following me around in all of my dreams. Every time I fall asleep for a little while, I have a little dream, the surgeon's there.
Yeah. So you're 10 years old again and you're fishing with your dad. Boom, ghost soldier.
Ghost soldier surgeon. He's just there. So, I approach him in my dream, and I go, what the fuck? I told you you're not welcome. That was Eric summoning you here. That was not me. I do not have gangrene. And turns out...
I just wanted you to get a real good New Orleans experience. I wanted your arms to get chopped off by a ghost.
It's fucked up. It's fucked up.
It would be worth it for the story. If you were double amputee, and you said, who did that? A ghost. What the fuck? That's a story. What do you want to say? Bus accident? No, fucking ghost surgeon from the past, man.
Anyway, I got no sleep.
So I have a fun time on the town. I roll back in at maybe 2:45 in the morning. Emily's got the TV on and the lights on, and she's walking around. And I'm like, Emily, why the hell? Why are you watching MTV? Why aren't you asleep? And she's like, I don't know. I'm scared. I'm scared to turn the lights
off. Terrified. And I thought that when he got back there that I would feel, you know, better having somebody else there, but it actually didn't help at all. I barely slept at all. Same thing, nightmares all night long. It wasn't until I saw the light of day coming through the window that I was like, okay, I'm safe now. And I finally got to sleep a little.
Yeah. I closed the blinds at, like, 6, and then you're saying from 6 to 8 you got sleep there?
Yeah,
and then
pretty much.
And then we had to get going again.
Yep. That was it.
Oh, man. I think this story just got in your head and just freaked you out. You're very susceptible to ghost stories.
I believe in ghosts, and I believe that when you summon them somewhere, that they do show up. You're inviting them in.
Yeah?
I want to see ghosts.
Don't do that.
After the ghost tour, I want someone to see a ghost.
You didn't even stay to see it. You just summoned it and left.
Yeah? I wanted you to see a ghost.
I didn't want to see a ghost.
I wanted you to meet a ghost.
I did not want to see a ghost.
Keep you company, you know.
I saw him, though.
Tuck you in. You saw him?
Yeah, in my dreams.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Followed me from dream to dream.
So, while you were out. Now, here's the thing, people. This is the eagle talking right now. Caw. And let me tell you something about my man, Gravy. Here's the thing about
God
my man, Gravy, and City Girls.
So
City Girls don't understand man, Gravy. It's
so gross when you say that.
What do you mean?
Why can't you just say mojo or something? If you must talk about it, then you just use some other word.
I'm sweating man, Gravy.
That's disgusting.
All right, so I'm sweating man, Gravy. But it's pungent, right? And, like, city girls, you know, they just don't have the taste for it, you know? They've never, like, a city girl... And there ain't no coon-ass city girls, you know what I'm saying? I want a coon-ass girl that's gonna understand my man, Gravy, you know? Takes a girl that... If they know how to set a snare trap and catch an alligator, boom, they understand my man, Gravy. They understand my flavor. So, anyway... So I go out, and goddamn, there are some gorgeous-looking girls in New Orleans, Louisiana. And I met a very lovely girl, and I'm very sad that we had to leave all of a sudden. We had to, you know, we're leaving New Orleans behind. And today, this is a spiritual journey for me. Most of my time is just work and then comedy. Work and then comedy. That's what it is. I am working on approaching women now. I'm getting a little better at chatting women up. And I also, while we were in New Orleans, we went to a voodoo shop, speaking of love life, and we got a tarot card reading. What was that voodoo shop called? I don't know.
Reverend something's voodoo shop.
And we got, we went in the back, you know, in the beaded back, you know, we walked through the store, and there's a psychic back there. Her name was Hope, and she read our tarot cards, and she had some pretty interesting things to say. You went first, Em.
Yeah, mine was pretty consistent with,
You believe in her? You think that it was real?
Well, I think tarot works on your own, like, you shuffle the deck, and then whatever cards come out on top... is what your reading is. So she's just interpreting your cards for you.
So, because she says, as you're shuffling them, put your intention, your problems, the energy of your problems into the cards, and then as I deal them out, you know, here you go.
Right.
So she said some pretty interesting things about you. She said you're a bit stubborn. I remember that one.
that's what you remember? She said a lot of things.
She said a lot of things. About your past, your present, your future.
Yep.
I don't really remember. I just remember that you were stubborn, and I was like, definitely. let her have it now. What else did she say?
Basically, it was all a good thing. She basically said, I'm going through a big change right now, which is true. I've been, you know, across the country.
And to be fair, we didn't say anything about that.
Nothing,
She said, big changes are happening right now.
Right. You know, good fortune. It was all good.
She said that you're the kind of person that likes to start your own business and stuff, and
right.
Which is true because, you know, you're you want to...
I have some plans for the future, and she basically said, yeah, do it.
Do it.
Right.
Make it happen.
Yeah.
So for me, I got... well, actually, she laid them out, and I got the Fool card, and for the present... And I thought that meant that, you know, my problems right now is like, oh, right now when it comes to idiot, when it comes to women, you're a fool. You're making an ass of yourself. And I was like, ugh, she's got me there, you know. But then in the future, boom, my future looks bright and rosy. So right now I got the, and I also got.
She also told Eric how to cast a love spell.
Yes.
So we got all the necessary accoutrements for that.
So if you want to cast a love spell. Saddle up with me for a second. I went to a tarot card reader today. She gave me a love spell tip. Maybe some of you out there listening, you don't have love in your life. Well, no fear. Takes a couple little pieces of equipment. Very easy to get. Here's what you need. You need three candles. You need a black candle, a white candle, and a red candle. And you got it right. Make little seven notches in those candles.
Pace them out evenly.
Like about an inch apart. Chop little divots in them. Every day for 7 days, you light the three candles and you focus on the intention of bringing your love into your life.
Oh, well, what else is around? There's salt on one side and holy water on the other side.
And you have to be holding... And you have to light incense as well.
And you have to write down what your intention is, put it in a box in front of this little altar.
So you just write, I want love into my life. And then you put it in a special box in front of the altar, in front of the candles, in front of the incense, in front of the salt and the holy water. Got that? You can go to any Catholic church, you know,
Some holy water.
Just with a Dixie cup, steal some holy water. Put it into a flask or something. Carry it around, you know.
You get questioned about it, just tell them it's for your voodoo. No big deal.
They're into witchcraft anyway, so don't worry about it. They're like, oh, you're into, you know.
It's supposed to represent the four elements. So the salt is the earth. The candles are fire.
The incense is the air.
Right, and the holy water is water.
Bingo. So you get all these things together. You light the candles, and you light an incense. And then you pray about your, you know, bringing love into your life. Then you blow out the candles. You chop the candles at the marks that you made. And then the next day you do the same thing.
I don't think you chop them. You just burn them till they hit that notch mark.
Oh, you burn them till they...
Yeah.
Oh, okay. And then, you do this 7 nights in a row.
Don't be chopping them off. We don't know what kind of voodoo is that.
Oh, okay.
You might fall in love with a donkey or something.
That's a different spell.
That's a different spell.
And then there you go. So after 7 days, you'll probably stumble into some love in your life. And you can't just be burning incense and lighting candles all day. Get out there a little bit as well. Put yourself out there. And know in the back of your mind that, hey, look, you got all this intention behind your will. You're doing ritualistic and putting your will towards this ritualistic intention. So you got that on your side, so go approach women, you know? Like, make it into a sacrament going out, clubbing, you know, and grinding your dick on, dry-humping on the dance floor. Make it into a ritual.
Gross?
What?
That's disgusting.
Dry-humping is what people do in clubs these days.
I know, and it's gross. What is with that? That's what made me start salsa dancing, because there's no humping involved. I remember distinctly... it was last Halloween, and I was at this club. It was like 4 in the morning, and this guy is like, hey, I'm so-and-so. He's like, what do you do? And we're chatting a little bit. He's like, you want to dance? I'm like, all right. He just gets behind me and starts immediately humping my butt.
That's how you do it in a club.
What the fuck is that?
Don't hate the play, hate the game.
That's disgusting. So I tell him... this is disgusting. This is not how I like
it. Don't you see everybody else humping masses out there?
It's gross.
There's a sea of people doing that.
Ugh, God.
When in Rome.
It's not even dancing, it's just a humping.
Yeah?
It's disgusting.
Getting right to it.
So, that's what I was like, I am not doing this anymore.
Yeah.
Salsa dancing. It's a gentleman's dance.
Yeah, because salsa dancing, it's guaranteed everyone's playing by the same rules. Hey. How about you give me a dip?
The structure.
You don't give me some dick.
Right. Dips, not dick. Those flannel zebra jammies
secondhand, I rock that motherfucker. I'm so in love with New Orleans now. Now I've pretty much decided I'm going to retire down there. And I want to be... Now, it's the kind of place where you go, you get old, and you just get weird. Yeah. You just get weird. I want to, like... I have this vision of myself when I'm 90... you know, tripping balls on the beach somewhere, drawing dirty pictures, and then as, like, kids go by, like, oh, I'm just gathering shells, just point to, like, filthy pictures of big dicks and stuff, and be like, there you go, I'm weird, that's how I'm gonna retire.
This is your retirement dream?
Yeah.
What
are you gonna
wrong
do?
With you.
What are you talking about? I'm getting weird in New Orleans.
Why do you want to show dirty pictures to children?
New Orleans. That's my Creole flavor.
Gotta say, that is weird. It's not part of my retirement plan in New Orleans.
Alright, what's your retirement plan?
I want to buy an airboat. And I just want to drive that bitch around all fucking day, because that was awesome.
We went on an airboat, and we got our Captain Gary. And so, how was that? So, we went around the swamp bayou.
Looking for gators. We saw only two gators. But
they were kind of baby gators.
They were baby gators.
But it's November. It's pretty cold in the bayou, and apparently in the summer, the place is swarming with them.
Yeah, he said normally they see about 100 gators.
100 gators.
100 gators out there any given time.
Now, last night, I saw three. We saw two. So, the later you are, the more it goes down. And and we also, luckily for you guys, we got an interview with Captain Gary. Let's see what he had to say. I'm here with Captain Gary. He just gave us a swamp tour. We were checking out some alligators. Beautiful going through the bayou in the swamp. How long you've been doing this?
I've been here 51 years.
So yeah?
In the swamps.
Whoa. And you were telling some stories about some minor accidents happen sometimes while you're giving the swamp tours, you know?
Yeah, things happen from time to time.
What's it called? A propeller boat or what was it?
Airboat.
Airboat, okay.
Yeah, airboat.
Mm-hmm. The people from Pennsylvania?
Yeah, people from different places, you know. Sometimes somebody, you know, had one guy jump over.
Jump off the boat?
Yeah. Had you know, people do things that they shouldn't do sometimes.
Uh-huh.
Stuff like that.
Have you ever had any dangerous run-ins with the alligators as you're going through, as you're showing people?
Yeah. Had them come up in the boat.
What?
Yeah. Come up in the boat. Right here.
Yeah?
Yeah, right here.
And did they smell food or something? They jumped on the boat with, were the passengers in there?
Yeah. They just were curious.
Uh-huh.
A big one or a small one?
Pretty good size. 9 foot.
Whoa.
Yeah. Got on the boat right here.
And you were also saying that a snake fell in the lap of one of you?
Yes, yeah. Snake will fall on you from time to time, you know. They up in the trees sunning, and you go up under them with the boat, and they'll fall down on you.
Oh, man. That's terrifying. And, did the lady run off the boat after that? Or?
Well, the woman jumped off the boat, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, she was a little terrified.
Yeah, I could see that happening.
What was the scariest alligator encounter that you've ever had? Have you had any scary?
Well, the scariest one I've had as far as doing the tours, I had another tour I was given at a different place, and somebody got my attention on the boat, and I talking to them, and the gator jumped up on me and just about got me.
What?
Yeah.
He jumped up like onto the boat and all?
Yeah, up on the platform with me.
Wow. So do they get a little more like aggressive when they get hungry or something, and so they'll start taking chances like that?
Yeah, I guess that's what it is.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, they think that there's food there, and you know, alligators, they don't see us as sometimes a big threat, and they just may see us as a food source.
Uh-huh.
Have any of the tour guides been injured ever?
Yeah.
Not you want to go into that? Is that is there pending litigation or something?
You know, in a different place, but nothing happened here. One guy got his arm, you know, from his elbow down, stripped of all the meat.
Oh.
Yeah, and took 4 guys to hold him in the boat so that the gator didn't get him in the water.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Now, before you were a tour guide, you were kind of alluding to the fact that you were a fisherman, you were a captain of all kinds of vessels. And then you got into being a tour guide, I think, did it take you, you have a very natural, kind of charisma, you made sure everyone had a good time, how long did that take to cultivate that?
You know, that it just comes natural.
Yeah?
Yeah, I just like people. It just comes natural, that's all it is to it.
Uh-huh.
It, I don't know, you get to know people, you get to watch people, and you just kind of, you know how to treat them,
mm-hmm.
You know what they want to see, know what they want to do, that kind of stuff.
Now, people come in from all over to visit New Orleans and to come here. So were there, you know, you have a rowdy bunch every once in a while, like a bachelorette party or something like that, and people get a little crazy on your boat?
Yeah, that can get annoying. Yeah, that happens from time to time. You want to try, you know, you don't want people drunk on the boat. It's okay to have a good time, have a few drinks, or have a beer here and there, but as far as being drunk, it's not a good idea to go in the swamp drunk.
What's your favorite thing about the swamp?
I just love the swamp. You know, the swamp is like one big living organism.
Yeah.
And if you allow it, it'll teach you. It'll bring you back to where you need to be, inside of your spirit. Mm-hmm. Let's put it that way. It keeps you right. Mm. Where the people outside, you know, they can damage you. Let all that damage get in your head, you know. Mm-hmm. Swamp doesn't do that.
Swamp is a healing place.
That's right. It's a place to heal.
That was Captain Gary. What a great guy. He also, after everybody got off the boat, you know, I think we tipped him pretty well. And he says, hey, why don't you guys get back in the boat? Get back in the boat. And we're like, what? And he's like, hold on good. And he's like, I gotta go park this thing now. So he drives down this, like, really narrow strip of just wet mud, turns around, and then just starts going on dry gas and is just throttling the thing. And he made this big turn for us, and we got an extra little ride. All the other people, there was, like, two older couples, probably in their 60s, looked very jealous that we got a little extra ride. But they were giving them, like, $6 a piece, you know? Come on. After showing us some gators, you know, he put a lot of effort into it, you know.
He was an excellent tour guide. He also told us about the medicinal qualities of a lot of the plants out there.
Yeah, you had a headache, and he was like, here's a bark for that.
Yeah, he picked us off some oranges that just grew wild in the bayou.
You'll never go hungry in the bayou. The bayou is...
The bayou provides.
It's just like a petri dish of life, you know? It's always kind of like really warm down there, swampy, perfect condition for algae, bacteria, you know? And which is the building blocks of life, you know? It just kind of looked like a primordial soup, the kind of like water that you're driving around in.
Yeah. It was really fun. Those water boats go really fast.
Yeah.
And they go over anything. Like, a couple times, we went over these logs, and I was like, oh, man, we're going to get
stuck. Yeah, you're approaching a log at, like, 50 miles an hour, and it's like,
uh-oh. You don't even feel it.
Yeah, this is going to be a problem. You just, boom, glide right over it.
Yeah. That's going to be my retirement plan.
So, I don't get it, though. What are you going to, like, talk weird to kids?
No.
What do you mean?
I'm just going to ride around in the bayou on my airboat. And meditate on shit.
Just get some real thinking. Good thinking done.
Yeah.
After we recorded the interview with Gary, he was giving us some good advice about getting, like, back to nature, right? He was saying, like, there's just, like, a supreme stillness in the bogs and the bayou. If you just, like, let the stillness come in you from nature, it's just so serene out there, and you can really, you know, unleash this, like, knowledge, you know? How did he put it?
He said that you just sit out there until you feel basically at one with the nature surrounding you, and it just really calms you, and just soak it in. It's like meditating.
So,
we also learned that alligators meditate.
Alligators meditate, yeah. There's, you know, in the... When you're driving around, it's kind of... The rivers look like a road system. It looks like a highway. And off to the side, they're like those muddy banks. And he was saying that the alligators can dig 65 feet into those muddy banks, and then they just meditate. They don't hibernate. He called it something else.
Yeah, there's some specific word for
some special...
But it's basically like meditation.
Yeah.
They slow down their breathing. They slow down their heart rate. They've even found frozen gators that they thought were dead. Frozen solid gators. They thaw out. They start moving around again.
Yeah, they just walk over. Hey, what's up? I was just... I was just meditating. I was talking to God. What's going on now? I'm walking around. Boom.
Boom. Thawed gator.
Caw-caw!
Gator is delicious.
Yeah, we had some gator sausage. Unbelievable. So such good. A clean meat. So
really light.
Kind of like a chicken, only like a chicken-y fish.
Yeah.
Very clean meat. Tasted so good. It wasn't like swampy or like fishy or weird smelling. It was just really delicious.
Frog legs, not so good. They were chewy.
Chewy, a little slimy. Frogs, yeah.
They weren't slimy. I mean, they were just chewy. They were fried, so.
That was the second time, actually, I had frog. And the first time I had them grilled, and grilled, they were a little slimier.
Really?
Yeah.
That's gross.
Yeah. But if you're going to choose between frog and alligator, I'd go alligator.
Go alligator
sure.
Go every alligator. Time. Go gator.
I'm going to pop some tags. Only got $20 in my pocket. I'm hunting, looking for a come up. This is fucking awesome.
Well, the food in New Orleans is off the chain, and they have these powdered donuts called beignets. What is a beignet?
It's basically like a funnel cake, but in donut form. It's delicious.
It's just a perfect cube of funnel cake. Just to give you a whole cube.
A thick piece of funnel cake.
And motherfucker, they're good. Holy shit.
They're real good.
So get a coffee, get some beignet, get a beret on, walk around the French Quarter, and get weird.
Quarter rat.
Oh, yeah. What's a quarter rat?
Quarter rat's like a coon ass that lives in the French Quarter.
What's a coon ass?
We already learned what a coon ass is.
Yeah.
It's a good cook.
Or just someone who knows how to get around the bayou. You know, the bayou is plentiful. You'll never go hungry in there, but you have to be a coon ass to know how to catch a frog, catch a gator, you know.
Milk some snakes.
You got to, there's all kinds of ways to make money in the bayou.
I'm gonna pop some tags. Only got $20 in my pocket.
Well, we got to talking to Daryl and Raphael, and we were telling them about, you know, our road trip podcast, Highway Diaries, what's going on. I'm your host, Eric Hollebuck. You already know that. Caca, all that stuff.
Meow.
Okay, great.
Meow.
Meow. Okay, we got to talking to Raphael and Daryl. And Raphael, we told him we came from Roswell, New Mexico. And then he gave us a lovely UFO story. So here it is.
Honest. I want them to stop lying.
They will never be honest. Government governs us just like they govern cattle. They'll never be honest.
Actually, I only seen one thing that kind of threw me off as far as a Cajun sighting.
You saw a UFO, you're saying?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, you don't tell people because they think you're nuts or whatever. But we was playing ping pong in the front yard, barbecuing, and I told everybody, hey, what is that? And
you can tell
just about three stories high, you know, was quietly passing.
Then they go, whoa.
You know, no noise, no wings. Yeah. It was just like a cigar shape. And it had a dim amber light in the front. But it cruised across the sky, and it was like, well, what the hell is that? You know, so everybody stopped in unbelief, like, what is that?
And when they stopped,
so anyway, after it passed, the only thing we could think of is that, you know, it was just something that didn't belong. And
so you just saw it. Did you report it to the police or anything?
No,
did you see it with your family?
No.
Who was around?
Well, we had about seven of us barbecuing and playing tennis.
Yeah.
I mean, ping pong in the front yard, waiting for the barbecue.
What was the sun like? How bright was it outside when this happened?
It was daytime, about 4 o'clock in the evening.
Wow.
And it was visual. I mean, you could see it. It was too fast for a plane.
You know, how high was it up? Was it as high as a plane, or was it pretty close to the...
It was about three, four stories high.
How far was it away from you?
Maybe about three, four blocks away. You know, it was very close.
Yeah.
It was unbelievable because... you know, what can you say? It's like, oh, that's it's not making any sound. No wings, just a cigar shape with a dim amber light in the front. So after I see stuff on TV that they describe as a cigar shape, I can say I've seen that. But when you don't want to go around telling people because they think you're nuts. But yet, I did, in my lifetime, see that once.
Would you say that it was extraterrestrial, or would you say that it's a experimental, you know, craft that, like, you know, is...
I can't even say it's experimental craft because it's too beautiful. It was too
They never will.
It was because if they just faster than a blimp, slower than a plane, no wings, no noise. So, as far as I know, nothing in the Army, Navy, whatever crafts could compete as far as even its stealths. You know, it's like nice and quiet, nice and beautiful. And then that happened maybe 25 years ago.
And then, so after Raphael gave me that story, you and Daryl were just going off in the background about conspiracies, right? Daryl's a big conspiracy nut.
Well, Daryl was telling me his own UFO story, too, where he just saw one day. He was outside smoking a cigarette. This is how most of his story started. I was outside smoking a cigarette.
Yeah.
And I just saw this saucer just floating between two houses by his mom's house.
Whoa.
So we were talking about, he was saying the government will never disclose this to us. And I was saying, well, they're going to have to one day. And he was saying, you know, no, they're not.
And he's like, I don't need the government to tell me that there's UFOs. I see one.
Yeah.
I'm doing some coon ass shit and I see a UFO. I don't need to wait for some fucking politician to get up on the TV, on the CNN, and tell me about aliens. I seen them.
No, it was interesting. It was an interesting perspective because my stance is, I know that they're lying, but I want them to admit that they're lying. And Daryl's stance is that he doesn't need the government at all to tell that they're lying. He's just like, yeah, I know that they're lying. I don't need them to admit that they're lying. We all know it. It's going on. It's happening.
Yeah, it's an interesting perspective. And I think that perspective is really born in the bayou. Like, yeah, I know that the food in the grocery store is getting more and more expensive. I don't need it. I'm going to do some coon-ass shit, catch myself a gator, and I'm going to have dinner. You know?
Yeah.
I'm not part of the system.
Very independent in New Orleans.
Yeah, very independent. Yeah, very much like I'll just cook my own food. And nobody has these skills anymore. Those people in the bayou, man. They have a good sense of humor. They're really salt of the earth people, and they know how to do shit.
Right? Yeah, it's really cool. Well, you can find me in the. I'm not
stuck on searching. Speaking of the government not needing to tell us what's up, there recently was passed the National Defense Authorization Act, and we've been meeting a lot of people across the country who voted for Obama and all this, but this is what Obama passed, the National Defense Authorization Act. And really, what this does is, if you are suspected, if you're suspected of being a terrorist, and if the government suspects you of being a terrorist, for any reason, if you're a whistleblower, I have a whistleblower website, boom, Al-Qaeda, and we can detention you indefinitely without a trial, without a lawyer. We could just take you, boom. And there goes a court system. The whole point of America is that you have like a right to a trial, a right to an attorney. You're innocent until proven guilty. And this takes all of that system away and just says, if we suspect you of being a terrorist. And the whole point of this National Defense Authorization Act is to, they're saying, oh, we're not going to use it unless we have to. We're not, well, you know, the NSA needs these powers. Trust us. You know, we need these powers now to fight this new enemy, this new terrorist.
You're considered a terrorist if you store more than 7 days worth of food in your house. That's one of the definitions of being a terrorist.
Unbelievable.
So I am a terrorist.
I'm a terrorist too. I have
because I like to be prepared for any eventual disaster type situations. Because as we learned from Katrina, you can't trust the government to come and rescue you. You have to be self-sufficient.
Everyone was told to go in the Superdome. They get in the Superdome, and they're not bringing them water. They have no plumbing. They're just all dying, passing over in the Superdome. Thanks a lot, FEMA.
But if you decide to take care of yourself, then you're a terrorist.
We can't send some fucking helicopters to lower some crates of goddamn water into the Superdome? Come on! There's no... Then what is the... What is FEMA? What is FEMA? Right. Okay? FEMA is the Federal Emergency Management Association or some string of nonsense that just funnels money into Halliburton.
What are you talking about?
I'm just talking about FEMA. How, you know, they're the they are responsible for coming in disaster situations.
Right.
They get 20,000 people or whatever to go down to the Superdome. They can't airlift water down there.
I gotta rein it back in.
Well, it has to do with the National Defense Authorization Act. So we all can see that something's going on with our currency, right? It seems like the currency is super inflated, and the Federal Reserve just keeps on printing more and more money. Blah blah blah. When the government puts out more and more money, just cashes more and more money. Okay, so there's a certain amount of gold in Fort Knox, right? And if you print out, you know, $1 billion on that gold, then that $1 billion is actually worth something. But if you print out $1 trillion on that gold, then, you know, how much is that gold worth now? So the price of gold's going to go up. The real price of the real economy is everything's getting more and more expensive. And this is what's happening. And as the jobless rate continues to climb, then there are going to be people who are kind of stranded, and they're going to send us, you know, the National Defense Authorization Act basically means that nobody needs a trial anymore. So let's just herd people into camps. I think this is what's going on. FEMA camps, people. It's all coming together now.
I don't know about that.
FEMA camps.
There's, like, no proof of that, though. There's proof that they exist. Like, what they say that they're for is, like, any disaster-type situation, then they'll have a place for people to go to be taken care of. Eric thinks that one day that these camps are going to be used to imprison American citizens to some sort of work-labor situation, or what would they do with these people in these camps?
They would just, you know, what did the Nazis do to the Jews in camps? How do camps work out for herds of people being shipped into them? This is my point.
I don't know. I don't really see that as big.
Well, you got took in by the Rosicrucians. Now, the Rosicrucians are kind of open about they want to reduce population, right?
I did go to a Rosicrucian museum, and yeah. I did feel like I was being recruited into a cult. I didn't read anything about reducing the population, but it's this museum.
Who are the Rosicrucians?
They're basically Egyptian followers. They're really into Egyptian culture. They really, get into all the magic behind the Egyptian culture, the ancient Egyptians. And there's this museum in San Jose, California, that I went to visit because it looks really cool on the outside. There's all this Egyptian stuff. A lot of good artwork in there. So, and then there's this video. I had no idea that it was this, like, cult that was running it. And you watch the video, it's basically like, join us, join us, join us. And then Jesus. I started looking into it. It wasn't like that. That was the subtext of it.
Read between the lines. Right. Join our cult. Join our cult.
So I look into it a little bit. It's this group, the Rosicrucians. That's it.
Yeah, well, don't they want to reduce population?
I don't know about that. It wasn't in the pamphlets.
Look at the George Guidestones, people. Anyway. So, Rosicrucians is like a magical rite. They have a couple levels. And I was telling you, look into Bill Schneblin the other day, Savali. These are good people. I kind of want to just explain the rites of Freemasonry a little bit. And if you're bored, turn it off now.
Are you just gonna, you know,
go to talk about
parrot something that Bill Schneblin said?
Pretty much. I really find this interesting about the rites of Freemasonry, and I keep alluding to this. And this is, I just want to spell this all out for you people. So you become a Freemason, and there's different levels, just like in Scientology. And there's like you're a Mason level one, you're an entered apprentice. Then you're a fellow craftsman, and then you're a master mason. And those are the first three. Now, during each of these rituals, you first come in when you're an entered apprentice, and you're blindfolded. And then you do these rituals, okay, and then they gradually turn up the amount that you have to sin, kind of like the naughty aspect of each of these rituals. They'll have you spit on a cross of Jesus. They'll have you spit on a Bible.
This is according to Bill Schneblin. You can really just watch his YouTube videos.
I'm in the middle of a goddamn story here. Let me finish it.
God.
But I think it's interesting because you, like, ritualistically sin and, like, almost ritualistically lose your innocence, ritualistically lose your hope for humanity, your feeling of togetherness with your fellow people. And you start to feel like people are sheep. You start to feel like like you have this divine knowledge, right? You are an enlightened person, and then everyone below you is a sheep. And if you look at, like, the back of a dollar bill, it's like a pyramid, right? So that you think of yourself, if you get to be a 32nd degree of Mason or something, as someone more enlightened than the profane below you, right? So this is what I think that the rulers of our government are into. They like to think of themselves as not only money masters, but some sort of a cult, you know. They have some sort of religious divine right to rule over us, ship us into FEMA camps, and take our right to a trial away. Because they've ritualistically thought themselves to made themselves into the perfect assholes. So we were talking the other day, we got some news here, Emily. We were talking the other day about the NSA. And NSA, if you're listening, for shame on you.
Sorry, I just totally zoned out during that whole Bill Schneblin rehash thing.
Oh, great. Thanks. Emmy, are you awake now for the podcast? You want to keep going? You want to start saying some things for the podcast?
Oh, am I involved again now?
You're involved again now.
Oh, thanks.
Hey, you want to come along?
Hey, thanks. I'm back.
Hey, you know who's back? Tiger Bomb.
Hey. Wow.
Tiger Bomb in the house. What's going on? The eagle never left you. Caw-caw!
The eagle never leaves you, people.
Are you telling...
I'm always here.
Oh, you're complaining I talk too much on a podcast.
Yeah.
You know what a podcast is for? Talking.
Don't I know it?
This is day 5, people. We're starting to get on each other's nerves a little bit, if you can't tell. Starting to get a little pissed off with how much I'm talking.
It's the Eric Show. We're listening to the Eric Show.
Feel free to chime in. So, the NSA chief denies domestic spying, but with whistleblowers say otherwise. General Keith Alexander of the NSA was grilled by a representative Hank Johnson the other day, and Alexander denied in carefully parsed words that the NSA has power to monitor American communications without getting a court warrant. So it's like he's so carefully weaseling around each of these questions, you know, with the team of lawyers telling him each lie based on other lie information that's out there. And the NSA's dodging questions.
What did they say?
It says, Alexander denied in carefully parsed words that the NSA has the power to monitor American communications without getting a court warrant. So he's saying that the NSA doesn't have the power to, but he's never directly saying that they haven't.
That they don't.
Yeah.
I thought that was common knowledge, that they do that now using keywords. Like, I've read in a news article about that.
He'll say, no, we don't have the power to wiretap citizens. Well, the question again is, sir, are you wiretapping citizens? We don't have that power. I know you don't have that power, but you're doing it.
Right.
What kind of secret government is giving you the orders?
So they don't ask him any follow-up questions? They just leave it at that?
No, they keep grilling him, but he's got all these PR people around him, you know, whispering in his ear. He's surrounded by lawyers, you know, whispering in his ear and stopping him when he's trying to answer questions and stuff.
So he's not on the stand, or
he is on the stand. Yeah. So a representative.
How can you have two people on a stand? He's supposed to be alone.
No. Not on a stand. It's like, you know how the Congress is set up, where it's like all the Congress are up on the chairs on the elevated rows, and then there's a bench of people in front of them, and they're asking them questions down on like a long table.
What forum is this, though?
In Congress, during a congressional hearing.
Okay, so he wasn't, like, on trial.
No, but, you know, a congressman is the people who's supposed to know what the hell... The Congress is the representative between the people and the NSA, for example.
Right.
Congress started the NSA, and now all of a sudden NSA...
It's out of control.
Yeah, it doesn't think it has to report to Congress. It just starts weaseling around the questions.
What is the NSA for?
National... spy agents. I don't know. Yeah, Representative Hank Johnson from Georgia, you know, a coon ass, is trying to ask this guy some questions, and he's dodging them. It's disgusting.
You know what else is disgusting?
What?
Texas. Pecos, Texas.
What a shithole.
What a shithole.
And I'm not messing with Texas. I'm not shitting on
I'm
Texas.
I'm messing with Texas.
What?
I shit on Texas capital.
Don't mess
capital.
With Texas. Oh, Austin?
In the Capitol building. I shit on it.
Oh, yeah. You did take a shit in the Capitol building.
I literally shit on it.
You lit that place up.
Fuck you, Texas.
You left a message.
You suck. Seriously, just a seat already. We don't want you. Go for it. I'm not going to stop you.
You know, the mayor of Pecos, Texas, we got a little interview with him, but he was chomping hamburgers in a SUV, you know, and the audio is inaudible because he was just chomping his teeth through Sonic burgers. That's what's going on in Pecos, Texas.
Disgusting. Fix your sign at least. Come on. Get it together, Pecos, Texas.
Yeah.
Home of the first
Rudo. It's called Rodeo. If that's the only thing you're known for, fix the one fucking sign in your town that explains why the hell you're here. Justify your existence, Pecos, Texas.
What a shithole.
Here's another news story. The rise of restaurants. Now here's there's a lot of restaurants are closing down, right? Bennigan's Steak and Ale House did not survive the economy. They filed for bankruptcy. But an Addison-based Twin Peaks has seen sales increase $44 million this year. They're doing well. And what Twin Peaks has done is they said, hey, I know what to do. If the waitresses have big breasts and tiny outfits, our sales will go up.
Twin Peaks, that's what that means?
Yeah.
Boobs?
Yep, big boobs. Yeah. Then they were always called Twin Peaks, and then they go, hey, here we go. How about if all the waitresses have big breasts? And then their sales went up $44 million that year. And they said, hang on here. I think we got an idea. Let's do this from now on. So then, here's the thing. So Twin Peaks starts bringing in all this cash when they started. But then Hooters has sued them because they claim that they have stolen franchise secret information.
What, just hire big-breasted women and put them in tiny outfits? That's their secret?
It doesn't go into so many details. Apparently, Hooters is not doing very well. Their sales are going down, and Twin Peaks sales are going up. Hooters they've actually just sent Twin Peaks now a cease and desist. Now
cease and desist on what?
On titties, apparently. Now, I'm not sure if there's... It doesn't go into all the lawyers, the legalese here. But they're basically saying, you've stolen our trade secrets. Now, they keep saying secrets. So I don't know if they're talking about recipes of, seasoned steak fries. Oh, by the way, also titties, you know. But it just seems weird because if Twin Peaks is being sued by Hooters... Why can't other strip clubs be being like, wait a minute, you're showing women's breasts in your strip clubs? That's what we're doing. Copyright infringement.
Fucking Hooters.
Have you ever been in a Hooters?
I have, actually. I have been at one Hooters. I don't eat wings. But everyone, I always heard all these guys say, I love Hooters because the food is so good.
I love Hooters wings. They're delicious.
See, yeah. All guys say that. I love Hooters because of the food, because of the wings. So I tried it. I went there. I had a fish sandwich because I don't eat wings. It was disgusting. It was actually quite vile.
Yeah, but all the waitresses have big tits, right?
Not even all the waitresses had big tits. I was like, where are the big titties at?
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, I got a pretty small-chested waitress. I was very disappointed. My sandwich sucked.
Yeah. I went into, there's a Hooters in New York City, and me and my buddy Anthony Garino went to there one time. We got a Hooters waitress, very pretty, wearing a sweater. Now, it was cold, it was like December, but come on. I'm going to Hooters, don't wear a sweater. What are you wearing, a jacket? Come on.
They should turn up the heat in there.
Turn up the heat, I want some bikinis. You're on a soccer field getting shown a thong, you know. randomly, I want some...
I wasn't even looking for that. I was just there to play soccer.
Hey, let's make it bras and shirts, right?
No, thanks. How about we use these jerseys that the school provided for us?
Let's just make it thongs and naked.
Yeah.
You know, I'll be on the naked team, whatever. Let's play some soccer.
Yep.
Didn't you get hazed by this person as well? Was there hazing in soccer?
Oh, I do remember one hazing thing that they made all the freshmen do.
You got hazed in high school. Go on.
Just this one thing, but it was pretty gross, actually. So we played on this soccer field that was just covered in goose shit. Just Canadian geese just hung out there in the early morning hours, just shit all over the field.
That's what happens in Long Valley. Canadian geese shit on fields all day.
Yeah, that's what they do. So, in the afternoon, when we would be out there playing soccer, we'd be on this field just covered in goose shit. And they made us lay down on the field, have our hands behind our backs, and just caterpillar crawl across this entire field full of goose shit.
And so, what? Were any... It was just the seniors and the freshmen? There was no, you know, coach around?
Yeah, no, they did captain's practices, and then at the captain's practice, there was no coach there. It was just the senior captain.
We got you all to yourself, all to ourselves, freshmen. Get ready to caterpillar crawl through goose shit.
Yep. It's gross.
Did you feel like, you know, after that, you gained the respect after the hazing?
I don't know. I don't think so. I mean... She still made us look at our thongs. She still made us play shirts and bras. It was stupid.
I remember. Speaking of Highway Diaries, I'm going to give you a story back in our 8th grade trip. Speaking of Hot Steam, we were talking about that earlier. Me and my buddy and Matt McGrath were in the Aerospace Museum in Washington, D.C. when we were 8th grade. We go to Taco Bell. It wrecks our stomachs. Then my buddy Matt McGrath goes, hey, let's go on the elevator. So we just get on the elevator. And we just hit all the buttons immediately. So we're stopping on every floor. Ding, ding, ding. As people get on and get off, they're furious with the fact that all the buttons are pushed, first of all. But then we just start farting. We just set a trap in one of the elevators. So, this is a fun game to play in your hometown. Wherever you are, this is a little tip from your buddy Eric Kalabak, a.k.a. the Eagle at Highway Diaries. Here's what you do. You eat a burrito and just hang out in an elevator with your buddy. And just fart as people come on. And then make sure that you're close to the, like, closed door button. So, as people try to escape, you know, you just hit, you know, give that button a couple little presses. Oops, oh, sorry. Oh, I'm trying to let you out. Oh, sorry. And just keep farting. Oh, sorry. Oh, wait, what button is it? Just keep hitting the close button. I remember as we were doing this, some people would just not react and just hold their nose right to the threshold of the door. So as soon as it opened, they went out. But this one, I remember this one, like, old, like, probably middle-aged black lady came out in, like, her Sunday's best. Like, she looked like she just came from church. And she gets in there, and we're just, like, me and Matt are just beat red because we've been laughing so hard. She gets on, and we just start laughing and farting, and she's like, Lord have mercy! Lord have mercy! You kids, get out of here! Get out of here! Get off of this! And that just made us laugh more, and just, we just kept ripping ass. God damn.
That's disgusting.
Oh, Hot Steam saves the day.
I was recently in an elevator where a 14-year-old boy was being terribly frightened by one of the guys that I was hanging out with.
Someone was getting weird with him. That's a good retirement strategy.
That's great. No, it wasn't like that. So I was at this wedding, and there was after party that we started. It was the after party. It was at this hotel that me and all the groomsmen's side, all his friends, were staying at this hotel. All my friends lived close by. They all went home, but I booked this hotel because... thought it'd be fun to keep the party going. So I'm partying with the groom's friends. They're pretty intense partiers. It's basically, there's like no other girls. It's just me and like 8 guys hanging out. We're all drinking. We're all basically going from room to room, drinking in each room's in each person's room. One of the guys just goes off the deep end. He is pissed off for some reason. I think, oh, I remember. He was hitting on one of the other guy's girlfriends. Right. And
he gets furious.
She shot him down, or the friend had fallen asleep, so he was trying to move in on the girlfriend. The friend wakes up, and then the girlfriend starts hanging out with her boyfriend again. He's furious. This really sets him off. He tears off his shirt. He's beating his chest like a gorilla. He's just fucking pissed off.
He's like, I'll put my scent on her. I already marked her.
Yeah, he's white girl drunk. So, we're in the elevator, and there's some, like, lacrosse team. There's, like, all these teenage boys on this lacrosse team. One of them has strayed away from all of his little teenage boyfriends. He's in this elevator. I'm in this elevator with these guys. This guy is just scaring the shit out of this. He's all up in this face like, boy, where's your mama? Where's your mama?
So this kid just got on the elevator alone. He's unaccompanied.
This kid is in the corner of the elevator, has his hands over his butthole. He doesn't know what's going to happen. There's a shirtless guy just screaming at him, like getting all in his face. He thinks he's going to be butt raped on this elevator. This poor kid.
It's always interesting when you go out with your group of friends and you think everyone's just having a good time. And you know, maybe you haven't seen some of your friends for a while, and then they start drinking, and all this weird shit starts coming out of them, and you're like, God damn. Like, you really kind of get to know people when they just get shit-hammered, and you see their, like, mind defragging, and, like, all, like, their insecurities are just being blabbed out of people and stuff.
Yeah, I don't know. This was my first time meeting this guy. This guy made quite an impression.
Yeah.
Later on in the evening, I guess because it didn't work out with his friend's girlfriend, he tried hitting on me, and his hit-on strategy was to slap my ass.
Wait, this is after he's taken his shirt off.
Oh, yeah, he calms down. He actually goes to his room for a while because we're all like, what the fuck was that, man? He calms down. He comes back. He apologizes to everyone. He's just hanging out. Then he starts drinking again.
Sorry, guys. I was beating my chest. I was trying to hit on your girlfriend. I'm sorry. Alright, let's play. Glug, 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 glug. Ah!
He
just recharges again.
Wait,
you're talking to him now? Yeah, it's my boyfriend. Ah! It's like the bride and the groom. Yeah, we just got married. This is our wedding night. You're talking to this guy.
Insane. John Wayne ain't got nothing on my fringe game. Hell no. He slapped my ass.
Oh, yeah. So I shamed him.
I'm really into shaming people. I said, who the fuck do you think you are? You don't just slap some girl you just met's ass. Yeah. Who do you think I am? Do you think I'm some, like, cheap cocktail waitress? You want me to get you a beer, sir? Fuck you. Get the fuck out of here.
God damn. For shame on you, sir.
Shame. Oh, you have been shunned.
Did you take your white gloves off and slap him in the face?
I wish I had white
You have
gloves
dishonored
on.
Me now.
he calmed down again. Kept getting riled up. He had to calm him down.
Jeff got a little white girl drunk at your birthday party in San Francisco.
Your birthday party.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, he did get white girl drunk.
Jeff got white girl drunk.
He definitely did. He's fun drunk, though.
Happy so to summarize, people, in New Orleans, get old, get weird, get some Creole food, get some alligator.
Oh, delicious.
This has been episode 14, New Orleans, Highway Diaries, New Orleans, definitely best stop yet.
Definitely.
Next stop, Hotlanta. See you next time.
Later. Hello, my ace man, my
mellow, John Wayne ain't got. Dr. Edward Bergen, if you're in this room, I need surgery.
I don't need surgery.
I definitely need surgery because I'll tell you why, Edward Bergen, Dr. Edward Bergen, Dr. Edward Bergen.
Stop it.
I need surgery because I got the gangrene. I got the gangrene. I was wounded. I was shot on the battlefield. And I have gangrene. I might need an amputation.
Oh, God.
I might even need an amputation.
This is not me talking.
That's another episode of the Highway Diary in the motherfucking bag. Thanks for listening to our 2-hour special super show, New Orleans, making it happen. Anyway, become my Facebook friend, all that good stuff. Damien Shadows is coming out 420 on Funny or Die. I just won my second stand-up comedy competition at Flappers Comedy Club. I'm 2 for 2. Thanks, everybody, for coming out and voting for me. And if you haven't come out and seen me do stand-up, I don't know what you're doing with your life. Because, like, I won contests and stuff. You know what I mean? So, anyway, keep it here. And thanks for listening. See you later.